views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
I don't know, I think The Eternals was really the turn where they started getting, like, well-known actors involved with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and that's where I think things started to get weird.
You mean where they were like, the story sucks, so we better get some, like, star power to distract people from it?
Exactly.
Look, popular.
Kids, Angelina Jolie, don't worry that she her character sucks ass.
Yeah. Kumail Nanjiani, bro.
I would call him, like, top tier, right?
But he's
I know who he is, but I don't think...
Selma Hayek?
Selma Hayek is top tier.
Yeah, well,
she's top.
Yeah.
You can tell that they've gotten older, but they're still, like, fucking stunning.
But you have to be careful if you go online to ask, like, why did all these actors look young? Because then you'll go into some kind of crazy conspiracy thing, like, the blood of
they
the Edison.
Yeah,
have to be careful with that question. Like,
Are people still talking about the baby blood
adrenochrome?
Yeah, they will always be.
I think Selma Hayek's just naturally beautiful, and she didn't go for the bullshit plastic surgery stuff.
No. But
you know who hasn't done anything to help himself out at all as far as looks go and aging? Fucking Bruce Willis.
Oh, that's true.
He forgot the key was just shave the head. That was all he did. Shave the head. There you go.
You look at actors that have had a shaved head for like the majority of their time, like the Tooch.
Oh, God.
Is aging like a fine fucking wine.
That is true.
Check out the Gang shirt at our new TeePublic store.
Vin Diesel.
Terry Savalas.
Yeah.
You got fucking Ving Rhames. Shavehead dudes definitely just, they age better, I think. And I think it's that the stress level that you get to when you start losing your hair and you start, like, dyeing it or doing the comb over, that stress level just makes you age poorly. It's like...
So you're saying just embrace it.
Embrace it.
Yep. Stop fighting it. Tell Walton Goggins that?
Walton Goggins has the die-hard era Bruce Willis hair where it's, like, hardcore... Like,
have you followed his career where it's slowly gotten to that? It was like here, which I'm pointing about 6 inches above my fucking eyes, and now it's like 12 inches.
But for him, because he's got that crazy look, so he can have like the little piece of hair that go everywhere, and it looks
crazy.
He's
following the footsteps of gods. We've got Michael Keaton. We've got
Michael Keaton still does not shave his head, though.
No, true.
Still does not shave his head.
I will say, though, that Walton Goggins, those chompers, though, take...
Oh, yeah, they draw your eyes straight down. Center stage.
But Bruce Willis is what we were talking about on this episode, not just his beautifully shaved dome, but also his entire career. There's been recent news about, like,
so many gems.
Him being kind of taken advantage of in the last bits of filming that he did, and also just knocking out shit ton of, like, grade Z movies.
But you're right. Like, I feel like part of the knocking out the shit ton was also part of the taking advantage of, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, honestly, like, I do.
And that's not the entirety of our conversation. We will be talking about that, but we're also going to be talking about celebrating Bruce Willis. The weird... Like, Kevin Smith shit is going to come up. The cop out and all that, of course, is going to come up. But we're also going to be talking about weirder stuff like Hudson Hawk.
Bonfire of Vanities.
And Breakfast of Champions.
I forgot about that one.
Yep.
Oh, wait, there's a couple I got yet mentioned, so I'm excited for that.
The Kid.
Oh.
Does anybody remember the old gem that came out in the 2000s, Hostage? That was a good one.
Oh, man.
You mean what they did to the audience? Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I enjoyed that film, so we will have a conversation about that, sir.
That's what's exciting about this episode is because there are, like, pure classics that I watch almost yearly that Bruce Willis is in, and then there's stuff that is just, like, hilarious garbage that...
I know we haven't gotten to the intro yet, but what else besides Die Hard do you watch yearly?
What else does there need to be?
You said cult classics.
Do you want me to fill this in?
You pluraled, so I'm just curious what else...
The Fifth Element.
Fair.
You don't watch Pulp Fiction anymore?
Pulp Fiction.
I don't watch it yearly.
No. I'm watching
Surrogates. No, that's not one.
No.
Yeah.
That's definitely not.
I watch Unbreakable.
Unbreakable.
But Glass can go fuck itself.
Yep.
fuck that fucking movie.
So that's what's going to be fun about this conversation is that ultimately we are celebrating the story,
his career, man. He has a, such a good
of
career.
A iconic actor. But let's yeah, do the intros though, before man. We jump into this real quickly. So yeah,
we're just ready. We're ready.
Oh, I know it's Bruce fucking Bruce Willis. Willis.
We're ready.
Come on, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker! Let's get this episode going. Geeks on the Influence. Bruce Willis. Let's go.
I feel like if Hans got that response instead of the Bruce Willis response, he might have just like, all right, I don't have a threat. And the movie would have ended because he's like, I don't have to worry about this guy anymore.
If he was like, yippee-ki-yay,
yeah, he would have been like, no, I'm done. No, that's fine.
Was that too, too exuberant?
Yeah.
Let's just real quick go through the panel here because we got a lot to talk about because it's a very long and storied career.
It is, yes.
We've got, I mean, talk about beautiful disasters. This topic right here with Bruce Willis has a plethora of beautiful disasters in here, and we've got
His last 30 movies.
Yeah, no shit. And the tag team of beautiful disasters is here. Groots and Fuck You Hunter are fuck here to join us on this cavalcade of Bruce Willis shaved head debauchery.
I'm hyped up for this shit.
We are gonna have fun today, but before we jump into that fun, we have a very, very special announcement. Four beautiful disasters.
It's a GUI announcement.
On the network. We have decided to grow the beautiful disasters family, and we have brought on a third co-host.
Yes, I was worried that one of you was pregnant.
Well,
he's the one that likes to have kids. This motherfucker right here.
True, that is true.
But no, we are bringing one of our greatest repeat guests. It just made sense, 100%. Murphy.
Murphy Lawless, yes.
Coming
Murph.
In.
So it's been an inspiration for several episodes where specific movies we had them on. And, I mean, it makes sense. Like, they've been, like, Lhasa Pastor. Fucking, you're on.
Tammy and the T-Rex.
Tammy and the T-Rex.
Really, anything dinosaur related. And,
But also,
that's fucking, never going to get old either.
Yeah. I mean, what's the shitty horror rock and roll one that we did?
Black Roses?
No. Trick or Treat.
Trick or Treat, yeah.
Oh, Trick or Treat. Yeah. No, Black Roses is amazing.
And so is Trick or Treat.
That's true.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So
Murphy is a long-running member of the GY family as far as a guest that's been on pretty much all the shows.
Yeah.
The first show actually to follow that dinosaur fucking like thematics was the Jurassic Park episode on GUI.
Oh yeah.
But of course Murphy's a perfect choice to join the showrunners and the hosts of the shows on this network. We welcome them wholeheartedly and lovingly into our bosoms.
One of us.
Yes. So Murphy, welcome. And yeah, I couldn't think of a better person to join you guys on your schlock. God. Journeys through
I'm so goddamn excited cinema. And stay tuned, folks, it's gonna be a fun ride.
Oh, hell yeah. Disasters.
Now there's another person to be tortured by schlock abuse. Yes
a person.
You're gonna have a rotating schlock abuse with Murph too?
They don't get out of that shit, right?
Next up is my partner in crime running this network and my co-host here on Geeks Under the Influence. We've got the sexual icon of Geeks Under the Influence. Haven't brought that up in a while, so why not.
Sure. Lie to the listeners.
If he shaved his head,
no,
you'd be okay. You'd look all right, shaved head.
Yeah, do it.
You'd be all right.
But I have a very full when I
you have like lustrous. It's not quite a pinhead, but the lower part of your head is definitely wider than the top part of your head.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm aware of
it's
that.
It's not to a point.
You'll notice that when he headbutts you.
Yeah.
Yes. That is also true.
Cuts like a knife. Shit is serious.
When he caves in your melon with his cherry tomato.
I'm not headbutting this motherfucker. We're talking about Lowdown Brown MacGyver.
What's going on, everyone? How you doing? I miss you beautiful fuckers.
No shit. Yeah, it's been a couple weeks since you've been able to come on, just scheduling.
What was Kyle's nickname last week?
The sexual macadamia nut. Yep, I think is what we called
it. It just made so much sense.
Well, the thing
that's
is, like,
awesome.
He even was like, "Oh fuck!" Like he even realized how much sense that made.
Yep.
As the coach.
Sexual macadamia. Whoever coined that needs a free dinner.
It
or something.
Was me.
Yes.
Wait. So you actually made a funny joke?
I made a funny joke.
That could be a shirt.
You made the funny.
I made the funny.
At this
again.
Point, you are Splinter.
Yep.
You.
I'll take it.
Yeah,
I'll
I'm just saying. I made another funny.
I'm dirty. I eat garbage, and I'm surrounded by people more talented than me. Yeah, I'm Splinter.
You do scurry away sometimes.
No, see, the last one's false, because if you are truly Splinter, he is still the most talented out of the fuckers.
Okay, well, let's say I try my best to do less than everyone around.
There you go. Cool. That's better.
Cool.
There you go. Because let's face it, he could kick all those turtles' asses if he wanted to.
Oh, I saw him with Shredder.
Yeah.
He had one nunchaku. And
I think
that's the proper pronunciation, nunchaku.
For the single?
For one, yeah.
Yeah, instead of a set, yeah.
And Shredder's like, oh, I'm going to kick this rodent's ass. And he's like, woo, trash.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
Literally in the trash.
In the trash.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Nice.
And the man who is the Splinter of the GUI network, we got Mike Tom Bacon.
Ho, 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 ho. But GUIpodcast.com for stuff better than this whole conversation. Close to 250 episodes of GUI. You can listen to all those available at GUIpodcast.com, along with all the other shows in the network, including Beautiful Disasters, From the Mouths of Madness. We've got, besides Geek Fathers, I think everybody is represented here tonight on the different shows in the network. Yeah. So
yeah,
we're good to go.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. We're just missing the Geek
Fathers.
Well,
no, Hunter has guested a lot on Geek Fathers.
Has guested as well.
That's true. A little bit.
We were talking.
He has spilled his seed into fertile women.
Yeah, that is true.
Yes.
That's actually what he screams when he comes, is,
my seed has been spread.
Into a fertile woman.
Oh, you're fertile. Never mind. I'm going to get, like, Pornhub level.
The Lamentations of the Woman.
That's right. Lamentations of the Woman.
Fucking
terrible.
Guys, we
don't even. Do we start with moonlighting?
Well, I was going to ask. Are we just going to talk about Return of Bruno, or are we going? Are we just going to talk about his acting? I don't know if we're going to bring up his musical career.
I think
we're going to get a little bit of acting.
Can we do the musical career first? Can we do that first? It's so short. Can we do
God
that
damn
first?
It.
It was the Return of Bruno, which everybody was like, "Was he here to begin with?" I guess.
Yeah, he was.
So
That was the thing I was talking about. It was an HBO special that came out.
Respect yourself.
After Hudson Hawk, and it was like a mockumentary, and it had like all the hot like celebrities of the time talking about how much they loved his ass. And I'm like, what the
fuck? So was it an actual thing, or was it because he did that wine cooler commercial where he was singing and someone said, holy shit, he should do a whole album of somebody else's songs and pretend like they're his? All right,
somebody was like, what if we got somebody that was like Bruce Springsteen but not good?
Like, we didn't have to pay them.
Yeah.
Like, somebody who's basic,
famous for something other than music. And then we made them.
Return of Bruno came out after Die Hard?
Return of Bruno? No. It came out before Die Hard.
Okay.
Return of Bruno was 87, and then Bruno...
I mean, Die Hard's 88, right?
Yeah, it was 88, yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's after Blind Date.
So the Return of Bruno was really the catapult that launched him into Die Hard.
I think it was I want to say it was the Blind Date. Blind Date probably would.
Blind Date was, you know what, for Blind Date, and it's nothing special. It's just a fun
Blind
romantic comedy. It's fine. It's fine. It's a perfectly fine movie. When that was really the transition from him into film.
Yeah.
From Moonlighting. And apparently they hated each other on set, but they also fucked each other too, I guess. I don't know. But there was a whole lot.
Oh, was
happening.
There a hate fucking?
There was hate happening? Fucking apparently happening on Moonlighting. But
that's like some of the best fucking though. Blind honestly, I mean,
what Kim, happened? Was that Kim Basinger? Shepherd. I think Blind Date.
Hmm?
Was it Kim Basinger?
Yep.
Okay.
And yep. John Larroquette.
Yep.
I remember
John Larroquette.
That.
Yep.
So he was able to actually act against like known good actors, and they're like, "Cool, what do we do with this Moonlighting guy now?" And that's when Die Hard was being shopped around.
Well,
and
when literally everybody else said, no, thank you, I don't want to do Die Hard, and including Frank Sinatra, who they had to because of the book that Die Hard's based out of. He did the original movie that's not anything close to what the Die Hard is that we know.
And he just aged out at that point.
And I've got to give it to him. And we can argue, we're going to go into the conversation about the typecasting that happened to Willis after that, even though he did manage to branch out and do other things. But like Bruce Willis being in Die Hard set it, it did so much for the action movie stigma.
Definitely.
With like, up to that point in 88, we're looking at nothing but Schwarzeneggers and your Stallones and your Lundgrens, and they're just these jacked, steroided out motherfuckers.
Big, beefy
right?
boys.
You got this fucking dude who is going to see his estranged wife because, you know, she left for a career, and he's just this New York cop who's just this blue-collar motherfucker who's like, it's my job, hey, whatever. And he is just like all of what, 160 soaking wet? Like,
yeah, and that's the thing, like, is that I think that's what worked with Die Hard, is that the audience saw more of themselves in his character, mm-hmm. because yeah, you see Rambo who just takes a gun and kills like 30 people, and
yeah.
but with his character in Die Hard, like, he's like, what the fuck do I do? Like, he literally,
he's figuring out as he goes. He
yeah.
literally,
like, he's literally like not trying to save everybody.
Time.
He's pulling yeah. fire alarms and trying to call people.
He's
because,
the everyman.
Yeah.
And
everyman,
that's why
yep.
it fucking works. Because, I mean, we already saw some of that with Indiana Jones, but like, that's still fantastical.
It was adventure. It was woo,
it was adventure.
You know, yeah, yeah.
This was the first time that it was a big action movie. And it was breaking what we just said, that the fucking 80s run of the big giant dudes. And it was a regular dude that gets fucking hurt. And when he steps on that glass and he's pulling the fucking glass out of his mm-hmm. foot, like, in that movie, you're like, you feel it.
In the fucking bathroom, yeah. He's like, I've got to clean myself up. This shit fucking
and,
sucks.
And he gets his lowest point there.
Yeah. Plus, there's another thing that happens in that didn't really happen in these 80s action movies, which is he fucks with the bad guys.
Oh,
now I've
yeah.
got a machine gun. You know, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. That's the kind of shit you never had.
Oh, no, it was ho, ho, ho. No. I have a machine gun, too.
But you didn't so really good. Have that with Rambo and all the Schwarzenegger stuff.
And so it's no surprise that all of the, like, trolls of the internet love Die Hard, because their entire identity is just being like, I got the gun now kind of energy of yeah. the, like.
But the only thing is John McClane actually
well, the difference
gun.
Is that John McClane was also fucking rad.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that energy of just like, let me antagonize you to the point that you're not doing your job well. It became a used element in action films after that. That was very much like, let me annoy you to death.
And like, the fist fights just seemed
oh, yeah.
hardcore shit.
Can we also talk about how, adding on to Hobbit and Hunter's thing about the dialogue and how he's fucking with him, can we also talk about how the fact where he's fighting the remaining twin and he's like, I want to fucking cut you. I want to fucking put you in the pie. I'm going to eat you. And as he's fucking beating the shit out of him, he like literally said, I'm going to fucking eat you. I'm going to put you in a pie and eat. Like, who the fuck says that as
Army
like your
Hammer.
Outline.
Army Hammer says that.
But as your kill line, who the fuck, because it was so well done. Remember, because then he hangs him.
Yeah.
And it's just, it was so good. It was so good.
He just, I mean, he lucked out, I think, too, because, I mean, that's good John McTiernan, who literally was Predator, then Die Hard, mm-hmm. then Hunt for October. And I remember back in the day, they would have the HBO commercials, and you could only show like a 2-minute clip. But Die Hard was that perfect movie where he's on the roof, the FBI's fucking choppers are coming up, he's trying to get everybody off, ties the rope, jumps off, it's the explosion. And it's like, oh, wow, that's a 2-minute scene, but that defines that movie so well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's like one of like all these crazy fucking scenes in that movie.
Well, and also incorporating what was really big in the 80s at that time with the Stallones and these Schwarzeneggers and stuff, but you put it in a Joe Everyman character is the one-liners. I mean, that's what made Die Hard as impossibly rewatchable as it is that there, it's just so many one-liners. Welcome to the party, pal. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Like, I mean, now,
oh,
I,
like, oh, yeah, come to the coast, have a few laughs.
I mean, it's just, it's so, you can basically quote that entire movie.
Does it sound like I'm ordering a pizza?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
my
God.
I know, it's like, sir, this line is for emergency. Like, does it sound like I'm ordering a fucking pizza?
You're talking about quotability. You've got like a Terminator thing, like, I'll be back. Nobody's as badass as Stallone Schwarzenegger of the people you know in your life, in the, like they are in those movies. But Bruce Willis in Die Hard,
yes,
you have your yes. like your irritatingly sarcastic friend that's going to make some fucking jokes. That's why those jokes are able to be quoted more. Is that they're way more approachable.
He filled not only a niche because he couldn't compete with those roided out motherfuckers, but like, he also made it his own and made an entire new genre of action.
Yep.
Because
accidental hero.
The everyman who has the fucking mouth on him, the New York attitude.
But he also wanted to get the fuck out of there. He didn't want to save the day. He's like, if I had the option to get the fuck out through the front doors,
get the fuck out of here.
I go and I'll call the cops for y'all, but I'm getting the fuck out of here.
I've got to throw this out there. I hope this isn't what we want to do later on for Drunken Scene, no. But he basically is like, you motherfucker, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to fucking cook you, and I'm going to fucking eat you. Who says that? Nobody at that point had said that.
While he's punching the shit out of the
dude. I mean, come on, man.
Then he hangs him, and then he kills Al Leong.
Yeah,
like,
you can't get more badass than that,
we've
dude.
We've got to move on from Die Hard.
Last thing I do,
we had to gush.
Is that the best way you can define Die Hard 2 is that he starts out with the white wife beater. And by the very end, he didn't change to a gray one. That is all the shit and sweat and blood.
And dust and dirt.
That's what I'm saying.
Nasty.
But you forget, like, oh, he must have changed. No, that's the same white one. Yeah, he's just been through too much shit.
But you know what he did a year later? Look who's talking.
No, man.
Talk about trying to not get pigeonholed. What do you want to do after Die Hard?
Talking baby.
Any chance I can play a baby?
A mouthy baby.
No. They came to him with that shit, and he went, wait, I just had to read some shit. I don't actually have to show up, and I'm going to make a fuck ton of money? Mm-hmm. Sure. All right. Okay. Yeah. Like, that's less work than being on an animated movie.
That
was just prepping him for his later career.
Yeah.
Oh.
God.
I mean, he phoned it in for like 40 movies, bro.
Yeah, he did.
I'm not even going to.
You're right.
I'd say maybe the last one that I saw that I was actually surprisingly impressed with that he did was a movie that I had friends telling me, no, honestly, it's not that bad, was Once Upon a Time in Venice.
Mm. Hmm. Oh, wait. Hold on. No, I got one past that, dude. You tell me you weren't impressed by Looper?
That was actually after. The Looper is before.
Was
Venice.
It? Yeah,
I didn't, it was 2012. Yeah, that's why I said, you know, 10
Looper,
years ago.
I didn't.
His
so I, did, I didn't see.
I mean,
Venice,
I think they're pretty close. I think.
But Looper is his last
good,
really.
That was really good, dude. That movie's really good.
It forced. I mean, come on. What's the young kids? The young version.
JLG, man.
Yeah,
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. JGL. Excuse
but
me.
He had to do the Willis eyebrow.
No, they put a fake nose on him too, dude. They made that. They did a lot of shit.
That eyebrow wink that he had to practice so he looked just like fucking Bruce Willis.
You're right though. And so it was for JGL. It was contacts. They had to actually adjust his brow, and then they had to do something to his nose and his chin. To get him a little younger,
and he
could
never
Willis.
Be excited.
He's yeah, just, he can never be excited.
That was more than they did with the flashback kid from Unbreakable, where all he did was do like the weird mouth, like whoa.
Yeah,
like, and then he just did that. It's like, oh well, obviously it's him.
So, but before we get to Unbreakable, there was one huge thing he did. Well, there
he
was a couple.
He had so much shit before Unbreakable.
Well, no, hold on. He had a couple good and a couple bad. You can't tell me The Last Boy Scout was a good movie.
It is a fun movie.
It's a fun movie, but it's not a good movie.
It's a Shane Black movie.
It's a fun movie. It's not a good movie.
That's fun like Hudson Hawk is fun.
Like Hudson Hawk, exactly. Okay. It's just that fun movie.
Stupid, fun movies that we should probably cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he also did Die Hard 2, which we can all say is just an abortion of the first one, honestly.
I go back and forth on Die Hard 2.
I rewatch it.
Die Hard
like,
3, that's where it's at.
Exactly. Groots, we're on the same page. Yeah. I rewatched Die Hard 2 enough. It's Die Hard and Die Hard 3. Because Die Hard 2 is just Die Hard,
but
where they tried to make it more than it was.
Oh, you mean where it takes place at Christmas again, but it's
at the
airport.
And dude, and then you got William Sadler fucking doing like naked fucking yoga.
That's
shit.
What makes
like,
the difference to
the
me.
Fuck out of
is
here.
That William Sadler is one of the most ridiculous bad guys. Where your introduction to him is him standing naked
doing
in
yoga
a mirror,
or some
doing
shit,
doing some
man.
Crazy, you know, mirror karate to himself,
fucking
and that's
stupid.
Your bad guy. And I went, okay, you're not taking this seriously then. All right, awesome.
It's that's also terrible. The bad guy that killed more of his guys than John did.
Exactly. Yeah, yep. No, but like, that's the bad guy. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sorry, but you have the dad from Good Times and then showing up out of nowhere. There are so many good things about Die Hard 2 that is not making a good movie,
if
right?
If you look at it from the good-bad movie perspective, but see, Die Hard was just a good movie.
Yeah.
There was no like... It's a good bad movie. It's just a good movie. So when they came out with Die Hard 2, there was a lot to live up to. And when they made, and I agree, they made essentially a good bad movie. It doesn't have the same flavor. Like you can't
because
when they came out with Die Hard with a Vengeance, you're like, oh no, this is a good fucking movie.
Yep. Take Samuel Jackson out of Die Hard with a Vengeance, is it still a good movie?
It's way more entertaining.
Yeah, I would say it's still entertaining.
It's entertaining, but I think
if you insert if you inserted somebody else, it's a buddy cop movie.
If
you inserted another person and they still have to go drive through fucking Central Park,
No, I think with Die Hard with a Vengeance, instead of like replacing Sam Jackson with literally anybody, you do the same thing that of that comic where it's the Garfield comics, but you take Garfield out and it's just John. With the lines from Garfield without Garfield being there, and it's disjointed and fucking weird. Where you just have Bruce Willis with his imaginary friend Samuel L. Jackson is key to his success.
I don't know, the way that John McClane treated Samuel Jackson, Zeus, I would say it's more like Garfield and Odie. If you took Odie out of any because John was really mean to him.
But imagine just like a Fight Club version of Die Hard with a Vengeance where like Bruce Willis is wandering around with that sandwich board and like, and he's like, no, my friend's here to save me. And they're like, okay, this dude is clearly cracked. Let's just let him fucking go.
There's moments in Die Hard with Vengeance with Samuel Jackson that you didn't have in the other ones. Like literally where all Bruce was trying, Willis was trying to do is to stop, you know, stop the terrorists, stop the whole thing. And they had that piece of gold and literally run away. He's like, Samuel Jackson's like, oh shit, my gold was in that car. He's like, yeah, well. And John McClane would never give a fuck about a brick of gold.
No.
Where Samuel Jackson's like, no, I want to go back and get that shit.
I want to get that gold. That dude took my gold.
Dude, he like grew up in Harlem. Of course he should have had a brick of gold.
John, that's what I'm saying.
Hey, all I got to say is that, you know, 1, 3, awesome. 2 is still better than any of the fucking sequels that
no,
came
No, fuck
out
you. There. I will watch 4 all day over fucking 2. I will watch 4.
Oh, the PG-13 one?
Live Free, Die Hard. No, I will watch that all day over fucking 2. Okay, fuck. No, I'm not.
I'll take 2.
I am not at all.
I will say
Timothy
this.
Timothy Oliphant is a way better villain than fucking William Sadler. Fuck you with his goddamn naked yoga. Fuck off.
We do not have enough time to go into
And Kevin Smith is in that motherfucker too, so.
Kevin Smith was also in a romantic comedy called Catch and Release. It didn't make it good.
I enjoyed it.
Okay. Live Free or Die Hard is... We don't have enough time to go into the amazingness of that movie.
Well, we can't talk about...
Tractor Trailer versus aircraft, fighter jet.
Yes, it's awesome.
Cop
it's
car amazing. Versus helicopter.
They took...
versus elevator.
They took the fuck you from Die Hard with a Vengeance and said, oh, we're going to up it. That's basically what they did.
Yes, it is PG-13, but it is... amazing, ridiculous, and having Timothy Oliphant as the bad guy,
dude, so good.
Where literally his whole, all his goons don't know if he's being sarcastic or not. He's like, sir, do you want me to take care of it? It's like, or do I? And you're like, I don't know. Do you want me to? And it's amazing. The entire movie, you think about it, nobody knows if he's being sarcastic or actually giving them instructions.
Yes, I know, it's so great. It's so
I want to look at the timeline here about when Fast and the Furious started fucking around with their formula. And like,
it's after that, yeah.
I'm wondering if like somebody, one of the producers, Fast Furious, is like,
It was like a year.
Wait a second.
It's really close. I think Live Free Die Hard is 2007. Fast Furious 5, which is what we say is the
that's 2009. Yeah.
So if
you really want to go back, Fast and Furious 4 is really where they kind of went back in and were testing the waters.
I'm just saying they're testing the waters
compared to 3. They're testing the waters. So if you really want to, it's in that realm of like, all right, I know what I'm doing here. But the problem is, Die Hard movies and the Good Day to Die Hard just fucking shit the bed.
Yeah. Now that one, I will not support anyway. I was angry. And did you know that he was on vacation?
No, I had no fucking
because
idea.
If you didn't know,
I had no fucking idea. He was on
vacation. He reminds you, fucking 30 times in that
I'm
movie.
On vacation, get the fuck out of here with that shit. Right.
So at that point, we're in the early 90s now.
Oh,
and we
did forget 180 thing before Die Hard 2, where there was Look Who's Talking To.
Oh well, yeah, we mentioned that.
We mentioned the first one.
Oh yeah,
we didn't mention the sequel.
You can't forget. Oh well, and Look Who's Talking Now. Although he didn't have a voice.
That was in the 90s.
That was the animals,
and it was the dogs.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, no, like,
it was Danny DeVito and fucking whatever.
They're
else.
Technically, all in the 90s.
So
no, the first one's in the 80s.
So where I really started to pay attention outside of his Die Hard shit was when he started taking weird roles like Death Becomes Her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing movie. And then he had that run in the 90s.
That's
that went
fun
through the
movie,
end of the
though.
90s where he was doing Terry Gilliam, Quentin Tarantino. Like he did a Vonnegut movie. Like
well,
we got to talk about some of
that. And that's
can
what
we,
I was saying.
Talk
is
about,
he
like,
knows to pick his directors. That's the thing.
Can we talk about how Death Becomes Her was like oddly like it is a fun movie?
That's Zemeckis, right?
Awesome. Super
but it's
fun.
Like but no but it, like it, it I get what you're saying. It's completely other like other spectrum for Bruce Willis. So when you see him in that, you're like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that Death Becomes Her. That's Zemeckis, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So just for a second.
And Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
He's worked with Zemeckis, Tarantino, Terry Gilliam. I mean, like, he's covered most of the
best directors.
That was 12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys, yeah.
12 Monkeys, yeah.
Lupuson, yeah. I'll throw that out there because his stuff.
12 Monkeys is a goddamn masterpiece of a film. I will fucking fight anybody who says that's not a good goddamn.
But 12 Monkeys?
Yeah, dude.
I know, it's
that's a solid fucking film.
It's the most kind of Americanized of Terry Gilliam's movies, like it has where it has the actual
American actors in it.
Yeah, American actors and a plot that's pretty stays coherent. On track. Yeah. Yeah, you don't get some shit where you're like, wait, did I take acid or no? It's pretty coherent.
Yeah, tried watching Tideland. But see how you feel about
12 Monkeys was post Dire with a Vengeance, but prior to that, we did have
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction, yes.
And that's the
year,
one
a year before we had Pulp Fiction.
There's no reason for him to be in Pulp Fiction. It was Tarantino had done Reservoir Dogs. Look, you know, John Travolta, the motherfucker was in the third Look Who's Talking movie, and that means he was not sending any star power.
No.
So he needed that. Samuel Jackson starting to build up. Bruce Willis is the legit person who didn't have to be in Pulp Fiction and wasn't there because he saw Tarantino and he's like, this dude knows what the fuck he's doing. I want to be in his movie.
And he actually has one of the smaller stories the film.
He did one of the same things that Brad Pitt did when he started to try to break out of his, like, you know, pretty boy roles, you know, and started getting dirty. And
California and
Fucking California. Could we do a Brad Pitt episode?
Well, True Romance was an early role for him, wasn't it?
That was an early role. Can we do a Brad Pitt? Because I really want to talk about
California. Yeah.
But he did Seven and he did 12 Monkeys. But Bruce Willis was commanding the kind of salary and star power he didn't need. None of these movies he was going to be in the next 5 years could afford his ass.
Yeah, true.
Terry Gilliam couldn't afford his ass. Quentin Tarantino couldn't afford his ass then, you know?
But that's proof in the pudding that this is an actual actor. Like, this isn't somebody that's like some action dude that, like, I would say falls back asswards into acting. Like, I consider that as much as, you know, great and all, Schwarzenegger just happened to become an actor. You know, that he was like a bodybuilder and doing his own thing, and they just got him into acting, and that's what became his thing. Bruce Willis wanted to work with these directors. He wanted to do projects with them, and he got enough star power where he's like, oh, I can do anything I want now.
And he didn't want to get pigeonholed in his career.
Yeah.
Because he could have gone into so many, I mean, he's been in so many generic-ass action movies, but he's also been in 12 Monkeys, Pulp Fiction, these movies that aren't anywhere close to your generic action movies.
Yeah.
And let's say, like, 95 is when Vengeance came out, but like he had always returned, but he had done enough in between, especially after with a Vengeance, that he's like, no, I'm not just John McClane.
I mean,
he would do his one big salary movie
until later on.
Well, and he'd make his money, but then he'd do like two or three smaller films.
Yeah. I said until later on, where he basically just is John McClane for the last 15 years of his fucking career.
Well, we briefly brought it up, but Death Becomes Her, that is in no way a Bruce Willis role. He has the mustache and glasses.
Oh, yeah.
He's very, like, scared of his own shadow. Completely out of character for him. But I'm pretty sure wanted to work with Zemeckis in a comedy. But I'm just saying, like, that's not selling people on, oh, man, Bruce Willis movie.
Fuck.
Where he cowers in the corner and has glasses and a mustache. No.
We completely forgot about Four Fucking Rooms.
Holy shit.
Well, that was, I think that actually came
He was at the very final scene, the Tarantino skit, where, you know, there's the poker game.
Oh, he's the agent or whatever,
there's the poker game.
Yeah.
No, there's the poker game.
He chops his finger off.
He's the movie star.
But was that actually shot before Pulp Fiction or was that right after?
That was after.
That was after.
It was 95. Yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of that was Rodriguez.
Yeah.
You know, that was Rodriguez getting people together.
When I saw him in that film, I was just like, oh, it made sense. It felt right that he was in this movie. If that makes sense at all.
Yeah, no, it was fun. And that was the kind of stuff he was into.
Yeah, exactly.
And I fucking totally respected him for that because he was breaking out.
Exactly.
There were also smaller roles in the 90s that he took on that he was a major presence in the movie, but he wasn't the main character in a way, like working with Richard Gere on The Jackal.
Which was filmed in
Richmond.
Was that filmed in Richmond?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, my dad worked at the Circuit Court of Appeals.
That's an underappreciated film.
For about two weeks.
That movie is
It's stupid as shit, but it's fun, man.
It is, man. Come on.
It's an early Jack Black show movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
That was what I was about to say. Yep. Watching him get shot to pieces with a 20-millimeter cannon.
I put that in the same position as, like, silly spy, like, intrigue movie that's, like, goofy, like The Saint.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Here's the thing. Bruce Willis,
fun. It's dumb.
Bruce Willis actually is not that bad in The Jackal. What makes The Jackal fucking terrible is Richard Gere's.
Yes.
Is it Irish? Because I couldn't tell you because goes back and forth. Like, I want to make sure we're done. It's like, God damn,
Can we not, let's not talk about Richard Gere. We're talking about Bruce Willis.
Right.
Not
but Bruce
Gere.
Willis actually does a pretty good job of being the chameleon where, like,
he has, like, no lines.
But that's the whole thing. Like, and that helps him out because you get fucking Richard Gere who has all the lines in a bad accent.
Hi, Trinity.
Yeah. Let's just stop the terrorist.
Oh. Yeah.
He was fine in the movie. And Sidney Poitier was totally wasted in that, The actor playing the Russian chick in there was fucking awesome.
Sidney Poitier should have retired after Sneakers. That's what it was meant to be.
Fuck.
It should have been that, and that's
movie.
It. I know. That's where he should have retired. He said, okay, I did Sneakers. He can't go any higher than this.
So we did jump forward to The Jackal, but we did briefly talk about The Fifth Element, and there have been, I don't know if I want to call them trolls. Yeah, fuck it. The trolls online that have said that is basically Die Hard, but traveling through space. I'm like, I disagree, sir. Fifth Element is a whole other movie. It's a whole other character.
He's calling it Die Hard.
A whole other feel. No, like Die Hard through space, because his main goal after the first 20 minutes is to get, you know what I mean? Like, as the story progresses, is to get to those stones, basically Stonehenge of a sort, whatever.
I mean, that movie took everybody by surprise because it was totally European produced, Luc Besson. And it's such an amazing visual movie and such an interesting movie, like in every way when it comes to like the sci-fi, the fun of it, the soundtrack.
Yeah, I mean, everything about it is
Bruce Willis literally dies
gorgeous.
Dyes his hair blonde. And
Such a different thing than like a U.S. sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Everybody in that film was completely different from what you would expect them to in that film. I mean, seriously, everybody.
Debo is the goddamn president in this movie, all right?
No, but Grinch, I mean, you're saying the director was like, no, you are not going to be the carbon copy of what people are going to expect of you in this film. And that is what we got. But I have read articles where people were talking about his basic, oh, it's Die Hard, but he's through space. Because his goal, his main job in the film is to get her to...
Yeah.
Right.
Those people are idiots then.
I agree. Yeah. I'm just saying that is a conversation that has been had. And please, Bruce, in your own words, could you please shut them the fuck down? Because I want to hear that.
So what are they going to say? Like he's John McClane and Jean-Paul Gaultier?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Like, seriously, it's bullshit, but it's worth the conversation because we just totally shit all over that because that movie is a whole thing.
I fucking love that movie,
dude.
Forever.
Like, no shit, man. Right? That's one of those movies that when I watch it, my heart gets warm. I'm like, oh.
The funny thing is that
so
movie
good.
Was given not
so good.
Like it came out right at the beginning of that summer season of I think 97.
I want to say 97.
Yeah, but it came out
pre-Armageddon, which was the year.
It
later.
Used to be Memorial Day. Memorial Day was the first real big release. Yeah,
no.
And it came out
a year after The Jackal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But it came out early May, and nobody gave it a chance. And that was a very strong word-of-mouth movie where, like, nobody even referred to it as a Bruce Willis movie because half the people didn't even know he was in it. But then the trailer started picking up and word-of-mouth, and that's when it caught on because you have movies not that long after that, like, I think fucking Lost World, that everybody was
paying
attention
to. Which was a shit-fucking movie.
Yeah. So, but I'm just saying,
fuck
like,
that
movie kind of snuck in there, and now, fuck, you can't have a summer release without it being that early May. And I think some of it is movies like Fifth Element that nobody gave a chance to. Yeah.
I mean, okay. Yeah. I mean, but you're in the
business.
Because
you had Fifth Element
so.
The next year, you know what came out early May? Matrix.
No shit.
Yep.
Yeah. Fuck.
Does anybody remember that he did one of the several remakes of Yojimbo? With Last Man Standing,
we completely forgot about that one.
Yes,
with Chris Walken.
That is
so much stupid fun.
Oh, it's so stupid.
So where he just blows
it's
motherfuckers
really
away
bad.
With 45s.
Yeah, no
it's so
shit.
Basic, and yet you're like, it's one of those you think he's got to be having a good time with this movie.
But see, I think 98 might have been the peak year for Bruce Willis because I'm looking at
Armageddon.
As far as like his visibility as an actor, at least.
Yeah,
that you've got
The Siege.
The Siege. The Fifth Element, Armageddon, and Mercury Rising, all in the same year.
Yeah, Armageddon definitely.
Oh, don't forget Apocalypse.
Of the video game?
Yeah, he voiced T.
Yeah, if you look at the couple years after that, that's when he kind of slowed down a little bit. And was
oh, you mean
like...
his character in Ally McBeal?
No, I don't. I'm talking about Ally McBeal.
He had a huge like freaking bukkake of success in 98. And then he did like Breakfast of Champions and he took a chance.
And Sixth Sense in 99 as well.
And he took a chance. I mean, Armageddon, on a director.
Armageddon was the biggest movie that year. So he was in the biggest movie of 98.
And he was also in one of the biggest movies of 99. He didn't take that much of a fucking break because you got to film the fucking movie, and 99 is when Sixth Sense came out.
Well, Sixth Sense was not shot for a lot of money. And it was one of those runaway, like, huge success movies. Because that wasn't...
And I do enjoy that film. I'm not a big fan of Shyamalama Ding Dong. I do like Sixth Sense.
That's where I think the dividing point, I feel like, for Bruce Willis's career is a heavy on action movies. Then you get to Sixth Sense.
Yeah,
and
fair.
And things past Sixth Sense are a lot more kind of
The only thing that doesn't make sense for the Shyamalama Ding Dong universe is that he was in Sixth Sense, and then he was also in Unbreakable.
Unbreakable was awesome.
But no, I love the movie, but moving forward, when you get to Glass and who that character is...
You're talking about Glass.
No. There's this universe he created, it doesn't make sense that Bruce Willis played both characters, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right.
One's dead, one's a superhero. You can't be both. I mean, you can, but that's not how your universe was built. You know what I mean? Like, the way he was cast in Sixth Sense, you shouldn't have cast him for Unbreakable, is all I'm saying. Even though I love that fucking movie.
They don't interconnect. Like, Sixth Sense isn't a connective tissue with Unbreakable.
I know it's not, but it seems like Shyamalan has tried to make his own multiverse to his films.
Just with the superhero stuff. I mean, like, Lady in the Water isn't like the other superheroes that come into Glass 2, where it's like
you don't know
the fucking pool nymph and the dude with the
arm. Did you watch what he did with Glass? I don't really respect him for
anything. But I'll give you this.
But you're
at the end of Split, when his character shows up, his character from Unbreakable shows up.
I was like, oh,
everybody's like, oh, fuck.
Fuck, yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, that. Yeah. This makes the shit, like, hardcore. Now we now know Glass was a fucking disappointment. Oh. But at the very end of Split, we were all fucking hyped up about that shit.
What director doing a thing with people with superpowers is, like, setting up that there's going to be a fucking showdown on the roof of, like, a building that is doing, like, a celebration with fireworks or some shit? I forget exactly what the plot is. But there was, like, talked about where they were going, and it was going to be, like, a rooftop throwdown. Straight out of a fucking superhero movie, and you're like, fuck, this is gonna be epic, this is gonna be great. And then it takes place in the fucking parking lot next to a food truck.
With,
like,
puddles.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't forget about the puddles.
The puddles.
Yeah. See, I'm gonna drown you in a puddle.
Ang Lee's Hulk was awesome in comparison.
Oh my god.
Come on. Both movies just suck?
No.
Did I have to like one of them?
No, look,
Scotty's gotta let go of the fact that his face is on a pillow. You gotta get let go of the fact that Ang Lee's Hulk does suck.
It's just terrible.
It's not, though.
No, it is. It is. I mean...
Thanks. That's all the wind being taken out of the room by Grootz's terrible opinions. It's a perfect time for us to take a break.
Yeah, I agree. Because I was going to go into some fun shit, and then he had to bring up Ang Lee's Hulk.
Let's take a breather, and then we'll get back into the fun stuff. We'll erase that Ang Lee Hulk.
Does my breather involve giving him, like, a sock party? Because...
Low down.
Ang Lee's Hulk is terrible.
The second half, there will be no talk of Hulk dogs, shitty movie scenes in the dark.
Made out of electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None of that. Yeah. No Nick
God
Nolte.
Damn it.
Zero Nick Nolte, all right?
Fuck that.
It was at least as good as Gremlins, too.
God.
What the fuck is that, dude? All right. Holy shit.
Sorry about these terrible opinions. We'll be back in just a minute. Listen to some of the other shows that you can listen to on the network. We'll be back in just a second.
Coming straight from the mouths of madness, I'm Lowdown.
I'm F.U. Hunter.
Do you love horror?
We fucking do.
So this is a podcast dedicated to all things in cinematic horror. We're talking movies, television, composers, special effects artists. We're going to fucking cover it.
So if you love horror,
embrace the madness.
My name is Amy Bogard.
And I'm Mike the Hobbit.
And we are the hosts of Deeply Upsetting, where we use our expertise to answer your most upsetting hypothetical quandaries, such as, what non-wiggin animal deserves wings?
And what body part deserves a secret mouth?
Which cryptid is the worst roommate?
These questions and more that plague you will be answered on Deeply Upsetting, available anywhere you get your podcasts and at GUIpodcast.com.
In a world of blockbuster movies, there is another dimension.
The dimension of schlock cinema. Join us at Beautiful Disasters on a journey into the fringe territory of B-movie abandon.
We review the flicks that are forgotten or underappreciated to give them a proper place in the annals of celluloid history.
I'm the Groots.
F you, Hunter.
Your guides at Beautiful Disasters. Come along with us for a fun ride.
May the Schlock be with you.
In a world with too many reboots and remakes,
two men will stop at nothing to make it even worse.
Join Mike the Hobbit and Tondi as they play by their own rules while pitching new takes on some of your favorite and least favorite films and TV shows. What podcast would dare to bring this upon the world?
This is Smack My Pitch Up.
Hey guys, Scotty P here with Smash.
On your left.
And we are
the Geek Fathers.
That's right, bringing all the trials and tribulations of being a geeky parent.
So welcome to our world.
And as always, join us
or cry.
Welcome back to the second half of Geeks Under the Influence, all things Bruce Willis. And before we get to the part where Lowdown just belts the theme song for Armageddon.
I was so ready.
You were ready to fucking roll.
You were ready to go.
I was ready to go, bro.
We are first going to be talking about our sponsors a little bit. First off, of course, Amazon.com. If you want to go through the entire Rolodex of Bruce Willis films, what isn't available through Amazon Prime is at least going to be available for purchase on Blu-ray or DVD on Amazon. So
don't lose a thing. So
don't miss a thing. Yeah. You don't want to miss a thing at all.
Oh God. Oh.
if the one thing that your collection is missing is Hudson Hawk.
Oh then, yeah, that movie. That's a
go
treat.
Ahead and go to Amazon.com through our link at GUIpodcast.com. You go through that link. Anything you purchase, we get credit for. So we get some money from the purchases that you're already going to be making through Amazon. So it helps us out. You don't have to do anything extra. You don't have to pay any extra. You're helping us out literally by just taking a second to go through our link instead of just normally going to Amazon.
Everything that we have mentioned and everything we're about to mention in the second half is available on Amazon.com. So make sure you fucking go there and purchase that shit.
And if you're a collector, the Criterion Collection did release Armageddon.
Oh, yes.
I have the Criterion 12 Monkeys. I do not have the Criterion.
No, there's. We'll get that into it. Get in there in a second.
Come to Amazon. We'll get together. We'll have a few laughs. And then you can purchase what you need, and we get credit. So.
But wait, I can't order a fucking pizza?
I'm trying to order a pizza.
You cannot order a pizza on Amazon.
Not yet.
Well,
not yet.
Yeah, they're testing the drones in Seattle, I think.
Well, there's that store you walk into and just buy everything and, you know, walk out, you know.
Oh, we're fucking terrible. Sorry.
The way that we really enjoy you supporting the show is, of course, TeePublic.
Boom, TeePublic.
We've got a shit ton of designs, including a couple new designs that should be dropping right before this episode drops, including a new GUI Knights design that looks like an old school retro saloon design that's going to be dropping.
I just thought like a sleazy 80s bar.
Or 80s bar design.
Which is actually more fitting.
Yeah.
That looks more like a, like, hey.
Like GUI Knights laundromat.
Or I would say the nice 80s it looks recently
like, it
single.
It looks like the Triple R, or not the Triple R, the Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Twin Peaks.
It looks like the
Roadhouse.
I'm single. There's vacancy. I want to get my dick wet sign. That's what it looks
fair,
like.
Fair.
And it's fitting because GUI Knights, like, you know.
GUI Knights. Not there yet.
No.
Yeah. But yeah, we have a new GUI Knights design that's coming out. There's a new deeply upsetting design, the Haunted Beach Doll Company design that should be available as well as a number of other designs that are coming out. I've got like the design bug, so there's going to be a bunch of stuff dropping here shortly. And that's all available at GUIpodcast.com/store. Click on the link, it'll send you right over to TeePublic, or just click on the store link on the homepage. That'll send you there as well. There's deals all the time. So if you don't see a deal, wait like 3 days and check again. And very likely there will be a deal. So, over 40 designs, getting closer to 50.
And then we're like, hey, listeners, you want to design some? Let's just add some shit in there.
That's the new thing we're doing. Yeah. That is the LIPS program, the listener illustration program that we're doing. Where if you think you have an idea for a design for us, send it in. Send in the design. It could be a play on some of our logos, an inside joke from one of the episodes, something relating to the Geeks Under the Influence Network. Not necessarily just this show, but all the other shows in the network. Maybe let us know what it's in reference to. If it's a super... We've done a lot of these shows. If it's a reference to an episode from 30 episodes ago, please remind us. We're old. Our brains don't work that well, as you probably know. But let us know what the reference is to. Send in your designs. If we like it well enough, we'll throw it up on the TeePublic page, and we'll send you merch with the design on it as a thank you. And also as a payment for letting us use the design.
We'll put on our fridge.
There will be contact with getting appropriate shirt sizes and stuff. And
you'll get sent
like stickers, shirts.
Yeah, we'll make sure you get stuff that's like appropriate for you. Like the
right
size.
I just want to make sure people realize like, we're not going to send me a triple XL because I'm a medium.
I'm sending
fucking
everyone baby onesies.
Is that the voice of our future artists?
You don't know.
God damn it. I don't want any fucking triple X.
Just send either a link to the design or the design to geeksundertheinfluence@gmail.com. And are we looking forward to the designs? And even if it doesn't get picked for TeePublic, we'll definitely throw it up on social media.
Yeah. No, it's going to be posted across the board because we have so many shows and so much on the network that we want to share that shit. And the fact you took time to make it, that's a big deal.
Really, I want to throw everything up there, but like I said before, is that like you guys are just as much of dicks as we are, so you're gonna have like just like stick figures fucking each other or something and be like,
yeah, we're not doing that.
GUI fucking each other's dicks and that's great for our social media, but maybe not for a t-shirt.
That's what I'm saying. Like everything is at least gonna be broadcast across social media, but we're not doing that for a shirt.
So on to the real meat of this episode. The thing that drives us more than anything else, we're talking about the liquid courage that it takes to talk about the man, the myth, the legend, Bruce Willis. We're talking about what we're drinking.
Hey, we're fucking drinking.
Hey,
we're getting drunk. You want to know? Well, here you go. Hey.
Is that the party version?
That's the party version.
Come on, bro.
The fact that the music doesn't go up an octave like his voice does when he's like, you want to know? Well, here you go. There's no change. It's just, like, okay, fuck. Okay, I guess that's where we're at.
I just like, I like the gang Kyle vocals of, hey.
Hey.
No.
I just see like multiple clones of Kyle wearing sunglasses going, hey. Hey. Yes.
Oh, we do it in, like the mirror reflection. Like we just need to get an image of Kyle like standing in there.
I'm thinking of what's that motherfucker's name? Robert Palmer, that video where all the chicks are black, but it's just Kyle and it's just Kyle clones with glasses.
I think that's called a nightmare, honestly.
Yes.
Is that Addiction to Love? That is the Addiction to Love video. Yeah. For all you youngsters.
We've clearly been imbibing on the break, and we're going to talk about a little bit of what we are drinking. Lowdown, you were nice enough to bring some beverage here.
I was. This is an East Coast local. This is from a brewery called Trapezium. This is their...
This is the second episode in a row we've had a Trapezium, which I'm stoked about.
This is a burner phone. This is... It's basically a Berliner Weiss. So it's a kettle soured wheat beer, which a soured wheat beer is a Berliner Weiss, conditioned on Montmorency cherries. Yeah, Montmorency. Fragrances and flavors of hibiscus, lemon zest, sourdough, and cherry pie. It's really good. It's a good spring beer. 5.5%, very sessionable, good fucking spring beer. Like, it's not a straight sour, for those that don't know the difference. Like, you have sour, you have Berliner Weisses, and then you have, what's the other one I'm thinking of? There's another one that's even stankier.
Gozes.
Yeah. This is, like, the lighter end of that spectrum. And so it's got a little bit of sweetness on the back end after you get through the sour. It's almost like a Sour Patch Kid, where, you know...
Sometimes they're sour, sometimes they're sweet.
Exactly. So it's very good, delicious... Delicious beer.
I would say, I do really enjoy this. This is something that I would say is sessionable, but also at the same time, you're not going to be chugging this necessarily.
Fuck no, goddamn.
Which means that a four pack of this is going to last you a little bit, but it's going to be an enjoyable time. This, I would say, is perfect training wheels for people that want to get more into sours.
Yes.
To kind of build yourself up a little bit, because I will speak personally, when I first tried a sour, I dove in the deep end.
I first tried to sour.
I dove in the deep end.
Punched you right in the face.
And I almost drowned. Yeah. It was bad.
Did you get mouth fucked?
I got mouth fucked really hard. So if you are looking to understand that flavor profile a little bit better, then starting here is probably a good place to start. And then build up your understanding of, like, that this is, you know, a different approach to a beer style. And it's delicious.
And I also, it's not a share, but I always had to bring it up. Whenever I see it the first time of the season, whatever that year is, I always buy it, no matter if I was looking for something completely different in a flavor profile. I will always buy Hell or High Watermelon by 21st Amendment. That is my fucking intro to non-cold weather beer. Like, that's, I don't care. Like, I was not looking for a watermelon wheat beer, and I saw it, and I'm like, oh, I'm okay. I guess I'm buying
that's,
this.
That's there been
was
around for a while.
There was something in the air. I have been just because of the time of year, I'm like, Mexican beer! So I got Pacifico and Modelo Especial ready to roll. Like, I'm fucking
Pacifico is fucking delicious.
Pacifico's great.
Right? It's delicious.
It's super underappreciated. Everybody talks about, like, Dos Equis or Tecate or, of course, Corona.
Corona, yeah.
Modelo Especial. Yeah, but yeah. Pacifico is right up there with the rest of them, too, as far as I'm concerned.
The first time I had Pacifico was probably 2011 or 2012. I got off work early, bouncing on a shift, and I wanted a beer, and that was actually the special that month. And ever since then, it's a good fucking beer.
Oh yeah,
it's a great beer.
Nice.
Yep.
Now, Groots, you got something a little bit different for us to try. Yeah. You got some liqueur.
Yeah, a little bit of a bourbon here. We're Virginia bourbon.
Fuck yeah.
Bowman Brothers. This is the their entry level craft bourbon, the small batch.
It's a blend, right?
No, it's a straight bourbon whiskey.
Is it?
Oh yeah, yeah. And it's made super East Coast local up in Fredericksburg.
Yeah,
delicious.
We are the most East Coast local motherfuckers right here.
Goddamn right.
Goddamn right.
Goddamn. And yeah, Bowman Brothers. If you ever get the chance to go up to that distillery, is a hell of a trip. Groots and I. With Crump back in the day, went and checked it all out, and that's a fun tour.
We met the distiller, rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Back in the day,
he was a cool fucking dude. He had that moment, and I love that when this happens when you go on a tour and they realize that you're like chill and you're not like uppity, and they'll be like, "Oh, okay, I can just talk to you like a normal fucking person. Cool." Yeah. So this fucking thing over here, and then it's just
this asshole.
Yeah, he was just being himself the whole time, and it was a fucking blast.
We had a great time.
Yeah,
I love that about. Not just like the fact we're GUI, but like just that we're those people. We're like,
yep,
we love the thing, but we're also, when we go to experience the thing, we're not like, so I heard me.
Or fuck just off. Don't give us the corporate tour. Just give us the laid back.
Yeah, give us the laid back shit. We don't
show
need
us the weird shit.
Nonsense.
Where's the weird shit at? Yeah. We want to see the weird shit.
Yep. We tried some of the weird shit.
We did. Good. Yeah, we did.
This is a very smooth.
Yes, it is.
Lower. And... I mean, technically speaking, it's a Virginia bourbon, but like. If people want to look like the snobs we just talked about, want to look at price point, it's ranked as a lower end. But no, fuck that. It's a tasty fucking bourbon.
Yeah, I'll buy this over Larceny or Bullet any day of the week because I think it has a better flavor profile.
And the sweetness on the end too. It's fucking delicious.
And it's affordable. And there's, if you like it, there's many layers above. I mean, you can get up to the $70, $80 range.
Yeah, you can.
With Bowman Brothers, no problem. And they're fantastic.
With a Bruce Willis episode, there's so many different flavors that his movies come in that there's a lot of different opportunities.
Not lately,
which we'll get to. But yeah, there's a lot of options as far as what you're going to drink, but make sure it's tasty, it's something enjoyable, something that you can in session relatively well. So like a good approachable bourbon, a nice light Mexican beer, bring appropriate beer or burner phone with the...
Burner phone, man. Trapezium.
Yeah, the logo solid, alone though. Suggests that that's a good...
No, I was like...
action movie.
I was thinking anyways. Burner phone, even though it was... you know, radio for Die Hard, but then a later movie that we haven't gotten to yet in the 2000s called 16 Blocks, where he's only communicating to the terrorist through a cell phone.
Sure.
You remember that? Have you guys seen that?
16 Blocks. And I'm sure you weren't too worried about holding on to this beer as a share for our definitely going to be coming in the future coverage of the, I think, 2004 film Cellular.
Is that the Chris Evans Cellular movie?
Are you talking
Chris
about?
Evans? Yes. Okay. Future movie. Captain America?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Stephen King adaptation of The Cell.
Oh, no, Cell. No, yeah. I tried to watch that, and I've read the book.
Wasn't that the sequel to Phone Booth?
Yeah, I think it was, actually.
Wait, wasn't that a Kiefer Sutherland slash...
Cellular was the Die Hard 2 of phone movies.
Yes.
Wait, but
yes.
wasn't the Phone Booth one? It was...
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell and Kiefer Sutherland, yeah.
Yeah.
Where the whole movie, he's in a fucking... Oh, my God.
directed by Joel Schumacher.
And those are both sequels to a lesser-known movie from back in the day called Dial M for Murder.
Oh, there you go. That's actually a good
movie. Going back to Hitchcock.
A really good movie.
Going back to Hitchcock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There we go. Yeah, because, I mean, let's face it. Who has not just tried to...
Dial M for Murder? I've not tried to Dial M for Murder, personally.
There is a remake of Dial M for Murder called Perfect Murder that...
Shut up.
Do
we need to do that on Madness? Do we need to...
No, I don't want to do that.
It was remade, a Japanese remake called One Missed Call, right? That's the same thing?
There was an American version of One Missed Call, too.
It was called Two Missed Calls. Because America's got to do it bigger.
It was called One Missed Call, and I think it had Halle Berry in it. Yeah.
I thought that was cellular. All right.
We're
the American remake with Halle Berry called One Missed Call was about her not getting the call to be in Swordfish, and her career got better.
Anyway.
Well,
let's talk about Cop Out.
We're missing a lot of movies between that.
I actually had a segue because that Billy Bob Thornton we just brought up, Bruce Willis did try his hand at comedy with a movie called Bandits.
Bandits is fun. I will defend Bandits.
I'm not defending it. I'm just segueing from Billy Bob Thornton and serious movies to that.
He did the whole nine yards, right?
The whole nine yards is not as good,
but it's still not bad for a sequel, for just a silly sequel.
Yeah. I don't think it holds up, but I enjoyed it at the time.
You know what doesn't hold up? Matthew Perry's cocaine addiction. It's pretty prevalent in all those movies around the time.
He
definitely held it up. I mean, he was keeping it
going. What about The Kid? Remember that film?
The Kid? You mean Disney's The Kid? You have to say Disney's The Kid.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's why I didn't see it.
That was a...
I don't think anybody did.
Is it weird that I thought you were talking about Mercury Rising because that's the only movie I know of him with a kid?
There's a few movies before that. We got fucking Hearts War.
We don't have to hit all this shit.
This is the point where it's all turning, bro. No. Tears for the Sun was a good fucking movie.
That was his passion project I was thinking of.
Yeah, that's a good fucking movie, dude.
That was okay.
No, don't fuck you. That was a good goddamn movie.
That was sappy as shit.
I will agree with Groots on that because the director's feature prior to that was motherfucking Training Day. And so you watch Training Day, and then you go to Tears of the Sun, which is fucking boring. There might be some good scenes in that, but that movie is slow.
It was like Blood Diamond in the sense that it was so preachy, and it got like really over.
I love Blood Diamond. You're talking about Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Connelly?
That's a pretty good movie, but
I enjoyed the shit out of that film.
I mean, it had Jennifer Connelly in it, so I kind of love it by default, but...
That's your blindness, but whatever. Yeah. She had an ass for a second, and then she lost her ass. So anything post like 2000 when she lost her ass, I don't give a fuck. Anyway,
my opinion, he went Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, then a bunch of this shit, and then a movie.
Oh, here we go.
Then he went a little experimental.
Here we go.
Rodriguez, fucking Sin City.
Yes.
Where he had a bum ticker.
Bum ticker.
He did have a bum ticker.
But dude,
a bum ticker.
His portrayal in that going against Nick Stahl's like Yellow Man was so fucking good, man.
But I'm saying that's all soundstage work.
And the narration.
Again, that's
the narration,
him taking that's a risk.
The narration's what did
if
it.
If you look at that cast, he's the biggest like person in that.
Clive Owen was our, I mean, when I saw the film.
He's the most iconic of
Thank
those
you. Yeah.
actors.
There are a lot of actors that have been big at that point.
But they were like newly big. Like Rosario Dawson and Clive Owen, they were definitely big and maybe even bigger as far as like in the zeitgeist at that time. But Bruce Willis had them by literally decades on his career.
Yeah. He's top of the billboard in that movie. Yeah, and
fair,
everybody.
Fair. And it was a, what's his douche nozzle that can never get a good haircut in the 90s.
Josh Hartnett.
Yes, him. His haircut in the 90s was so fucking bad. Josh Hartnett's haircut in the 90s was so bad. It was like, dude, you have a cowlick permanently on the side of your head.
Do you remember when people called him Josh Hottynet? Do you remember that time?
Why?
Was that different than it was 20 years ago?
Look, what's worse, is Bennifer Part 2 or Josh Hottynet? Like, I mean...
I've enjoyed his acting for the most part, to be honest.
Where he just looks like an exhausted bartender?
He's great in Black Hawk Down, and if you haven't seen Bunraku... That movie's fucking awesome.
Well, Faculty.
I kind of remember that. That's been a long
time.
He did the Penny Dreadful stuff.
He was good in Penny Dreadful.
He did drop off the face. Like, he got away from acting for a little while. He took a break.
But,
you know, he's only in like 3 minutes of Sin City, by the way.
Yeah. The beginning and the ending.
Yeah.
That's it. But Before the same year that Sin City came out, Bruce Willis also did Hostage.
I saw this movie before, and it had Kevin Spacey and Samuel L. Jackson. It was way better. So.
Oh, fair enough.
Also, now, I will say, the fact that I remember Striking Distance with fucking Sarah Jessica Parker.
Is that the boat one?
Yeah.
Oh,
where he's a cop with a bum knee.
He's a cop with a bum knee and a speedboat.
Yeah.
God, I forgot about that movie.
He's a fucking harbor cop. It's the dumbest shit ever. It was like the freaking body of evidence of his movies at that time.
Oh, God.
I will say Hostage got a better rating than Ocean's 12. So,
well, that's not hard.
Ocean's 12 was better than Ocean's 13.
I mean, Jesus. Ocean's, they just had fun with those movies. I don't have any problems with those movies.
Should we bring up Red? It is based
on a
comic.
Red was fun.
That's down the road. We still have, like, Lucky Number 11.
That was good fun.
That was back at Harnett? Also, God damn it.
Yeah. No, but that was a fun movie.
That was a fun movie.
Morgan Freeman, Harnett, I feel like I'm missing like two actors that were in that film.
Oh.
Now, I will say another one that was a surprise for me that was good, at least I enjoyed, because apparently I'm the only one that enjoyed Hostage, was 16 Blocks. I enjoyed that film.
I love Mos Def, I think he's an incredible actor, but he is so fucking annoying in that movie. It's his voice. He's like, oh, no, they're shooting at me. Just this, like,
that's his voice in every role.
No, have you seen Something the Fucking Lord Made? Because if you want to see Mos Def at his top-tier acting, right. Something the Lord Made with Alan fucking Rickman.
Now, what they should have done for 16 Blocks is get Chris Tucker to do the
voice from
The Fifth Element and just be like,
oh, no, they're shooting at me. Come in. I want to see the Fifth Element sequel called 16 Elements, and it's just Chris Rock and Bruce Willis.
Chris Rock and Chris Tucker?
Chris Tucker, whatever.
Planet Terror, man. Like, we already talked about Sin City, but Planet Terror was his next big, like, fucking, I'm in this shit, guy. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, really.
We're already a few years past Cop Out, because that was, what, 2002?
No, that was like 2010.
That was 2008 that was after, or 10 or something.
Yeah. Cop Out is after Live Free or Die Hard. That's how he met Kevin Smith.
So maybe, all right, so that is the shift.
2010, yeah.
That is the shift where you can tell he stopped giving a fuck.
Because of the movie, so I'm going to go back and talk about Planet Terror, which is a really fun film that Rob Rodriguez directed. It's about zombies. And
yeah, that was a good
one. He's like the general that doesn't listen to anybody.
I mean, he's pretty much a cameo in that.
I know.
He doesn't have
but
any. Like,
Cop Out fucking sucks.
Now, Cop Out is a fun, stupid movie, but
no,
you could
not.
Tell
no,
he totally
not,
was
there's
phoning
not fun.
It the fucking.
Well, look
there's
at the movies
that
he did the
that
same
movie.
Year and talk about phoning it in. As much as I do like one of these movies, Cop Out, The Expendables, and Red all came out in 2010.
Oh, The Expendables. Hey, Red is way more fun than fucking Cop Out,
that's
dude.
The one I enjoy, but even in Red, that's not a good movie because Bruce Willis is acting. Bruce Willis is clearly phoning it in that movie. It's everybody else that's doing a lot of the fucking work. That's an ensemble piece that's really fun. Bruce Willis is there.
Well, that's because he's there with, Helen Mirren and
Morgan Freeman. Fucking
John Malkovich.
Stop. You know what else he was doing at that time?
Pierre the Man, his homage.
You know what else he was doing at the time? Fucking like Transformers 4. Fuck off.
Who's that?
John Malkovich.
We do not speak of the Transformers, please. It's called a paycheck.
And Bruce Willis knows how to make one of those.
But
Jason Statham was in a Uwe Boll movie along with a fucking...
I mean, they're all collecting paychecks. I will say, though, as bad as 2010 is with the Red and the shitty movies like that, 2012, motherfucker is in a Wes Anderson movie and Looper. So he's in Moonrise Kingdom.
Moonrise Kingdom was so fucking fun, dude.
That kind of is like, I know I took these other movies as paychecks. Let me try. I mean, both of them. A Wes Anderson movie.
And Expendables 2. So it's a Stallone movie, right?
He made a big paycheck.
Dude, I remember how big The Expendables was for people. Like,
no risk.
One of our particular...
They're fun flicks.
One of our GUI hosts of Geek Fathers, I'm talking about A. Kyle Smash, I remember his description of... walking out of seeing The Expendables way back when, because he and I were, you know, friends back then. He said, I just wanted to walk out of theater and punch somebody. It was so good. So
this is a Kyle statement to
this
make.
This is a Kyle statement.
You mean the man that initially defended Batman v Superman?
No, hold on, hold on. He initially defended Superman Returns.
Oh, correct, yeah.
And then Man of Steel.
I've done that before, too.
Hey, fuck you. Man of Steel's good. I will fucking defend that film.
We don't have time.
Hey, get your, like,
2012.
Get your Jesus shit out of the way. It's a good film.
Was his last hurrah.
Who's that?
Bruce Willis.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Oh, okay, fair.
I'm looking at the list of stuff that he was
Looper,
in.
Looper, Fire with A Good Day to Die Hard was 2013. Yeah, that about sums it up. Yeah, 2012.
Looper was fucking awesome.
Look, Once Upon a Time in Venice, I will still stand by, is that it's not a high-budget picture. It's not anything great. But it's, like, it's decent. It's a decent film.
But he hasn't had, like, any kind of, like, an acclaimed, interesting movie where he was actually had a chance to act or do something interesting since 2012.
I'm looking at it, and you are 100% correct, because
there
I
was
give
potential.
The only thing I've watched since then was Death Wish, and that was a fucking tire
well,
fire.
I would say there was potential with the reprising his role with Split, and then going into
no, it was
Glass.
Shit. It was shit.
But that's the
that
last.
Was shit.
Yeah,
no, it was no, terrible.
No, there
right.
was potential.
There was potential,
but
there
then
was
the it might
happen. But
yeah,
so I will
Sean
say
Lord
that
fucked it up.
A good Day to Die Hard was the worst of the Die Hard films,
yes.
But. There was slated that there was going to be six, and then he was waiting on the green light to do six, and that never happened. So, like, I feel like before, like, it sucks that we never got the complete John. I feel like we have an incomplete John McClane.
We had that Die Hard battery commercial.
I absolutely disagree, because I have the first three, and I have a complete John McClane experience.
Well, that's your opinion versus reality, so I give a fuck about that. I'm saying, like, an actual, what they're doing, John McClane movies, they've had two since then.
I accept his reality as my own, honestly.
Well, that's fine, and you can jump in the black hole with him and be sucked away forever and not be fine. I'm just saying, like...
What I'm looking at, I'm looking at his list of films, and one thing that's interesting
they're terrible.
Almost like Gangbusters, it's, like, anywhere between, like, 2 and 4 movies a year for the majority of his career, where... He's a working actor, but he's also, there's a line that he's not overloading himself. There's some years more than others, but, like, it's usually around 3 or 4 films a year that he's doing.
Look at this.
And then 2021 hits, and he does 7 films in 2021, and then he does 6 films in 2022.
Oh, yeah. No, he's been doing films and films and films. And that's during a pandemic.
Dude,
he's still cranking out that many films during a pandemic.
The films he's doing, the highest rating is, like, 4.
Yeah.
Yes,
they're dog shit.
Garbage. So I frequent a lot of different YouTube channels that check out different bad movies. And he did this movie with that guy with the really fucking blue eyes. It's a sci-fi flick maybe a year or two ago. And it's so hilariously bad, and it's so hilarious.
Are you talking about Cosmic Sin?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, I looked at that and went, Bruce Willis sci-fi movie in space. Cool, I'm down. And then didn't get a chance to before
Dude's
I saw the reviews on it.
Rating.
The reviews on it, I was like, the reviews were like, this is maybe the worst sci-fi film I've ever seen. And I went, okay, I can't.
Oh, that wasn't even it.
Is that the one on Netflix?
No, the one I'm talking about is called Apex.
Apex.
Oh,
Apex.
No.
Yeah.
That is 2.9.
That's 2021. No. That came out the year late. No, that came out the same year. Never mind.
Yeah.
Same year, and it has a better rating than Cosmic Sin.
Yeah, no, it's...
By 0.4.
It's kind of unfortunate because, like, I know he's now retired. This is the last of what he's going to have released come out. Because he could have had that potential of having, like, a Nick Cage. Because, like, we talk Nick Cage up now. We forget about the Left Behind and the fucking shit that was
Oh, you mean the Unknown or whatever it was called? Where the Known, Unknown.
Nick Cage for a period of 10 years had some shit.
Oh, and some real shit.
Then he's kind of resurrected and it kind of sucks because of Bruce Willis's condition. This is it.
Yeah. But I also,
that's part of it too. Is like
if there's people out there being like he the condition that he's dealing with isn't really that bad. He just wants an excuse to stop acting. They can go fuck themselves. This is a dude that can just say, I'm done acting, and doesn't need to have an excuse
he's
of having a degenerative fucking condition as
what
an excuse.
What is the... And this is because I haven't looked it up. What is the, like... If it's degenerative, what is the long-term with that?
Well, part of it is him.
Alopecia? Alopecia?
I don't know.
It's like communication.
He has had a very big ego for a long time. That has been some of the problems that he's had. A lot of the reasons he has worked with certain directors and then not worked with them again is because he's been traditionally very hard to work with.
Mm. I did hear about that with the cop-out thing with Kevin Smith.
Kevin Smith, that broke his fucking heart. And we heard all about that in his like spoken word shit.
It is also Kevin Smith who is going to, I mean.
He's like, a sensitive dude.
Well, he's gonna put everything out there as opposed to somebody like Luc Besson or John McTiernan who might not communicate as much as Kevin Smith's going to.
Yeah, the condition is aphasia. And it's a brain condition responsible for reducing your ability for expression and comprehension. So basically he has trouble like with comprehension moving forward, which is why, from what I understand, he was being fed a lot of his lines in later roles before he quit acting.
You're thinking he had it before he actually announced?
No, that's a lot of the conversation is that actually the reason why there was a speed up in the number of films that he was in is because people were basically like trying to get out as many roles as possible. And there's mixed conversation on whether that was to just make sure he had a nice nest egg to like be comfortable before not being able to even do that.
Mm-hmm.
And some it was a conversation about people taking advantage of him in his minimal comprehension state.
He's Bruce Willis. He doesn't have to do anymore. He's done.
No, he's done. That's what I'm saying. He's good.
He had a ton of stuff that's come out the last 2 years that has not been well received, but I don't think that has any factor in his decision if you can't do what an actor is supposed to do, which is comprehend lines, be able to communicate the lines, things like that.
He's supposed to be able to emote.
You have to walk away. And look, there are plenty of actors that we can say we can see where they were taken advantage of. I mean, fuck, one of the movies we covered on Beautiful Disasters, Vincent Price is in that shitty, shitty fucking dead zombie movie thing. We could also say that, you know, he's done a shitload of movies. Look back, and I'm kind of curious on some of these directors of these movies, because one of the things that he took a big risk on and it paid off in his career is he took a risk on Tarantino.
Oh, yep.
He took a risk on Luc Besson and some of these directors that had not established it. So you could also almost look at maybe he did so many movies because he wants to give these directors a chance. I mean, again,
he knows,
Tarantino was not known going into Pulp Fiction, okay?
And like, he also knows that because he had done that in the past, later on in his career, he's thinking maybe I could do the same thing with these other young directors. It's like, my name associated with their film.
Yeah.
Will, because honestly, like, if you remember way back when in the 90s when Pulp Fiction came out, what were the names you saw on the marquee for the fucking film?
I'll throw you in one more. Like, we brought up M. Night. The only reason people went to go see Sixth Sense in any way is because Bruce Willis starred in that movie. And if he had not looked at that script and said, okay, first time director, I'll go ahead and star in your movie. Mm-hmm. For the good and the bad, you wouldn't know who M. Night is.
True,
and I can say, look, if you look at that flurry of movies, who knows if he's just like, you know what? I like these directors' earlier stuff.
I believe in them. I'm going to give them a shot because I believe in the project. And it just didn't.
Knocking them out.
Lightning didn't strike twice. So it just didn't work that way. But I get what you're saying is like most of these films, he might have been like, all right. And maybe he knew he was on his way out too. And he was like, hey, my name still holds weight in Hollywood. Let me do these films.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what he's done throughout his career.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good fucking point.
There's a lot of really good actors that have done a lot of where they're just working actors also, like Willem Dafoe or Anthony Hopkins. You know,
he just has a new movie coming out recently. Actually, Anthony Hopkins.
I mean, there's so many. John Malkovich. We talked about him before. A great example of someone who has done great things, but also has done a lot of other things.
Yes.
He's in Space Force. He's in that now.
Well, I think the difference that between those kinds of actors and Bruce Willis is that, you know, a lot of those actors, though they have appeared like Malkovich was in Red, right?
Well, yes. Yeah. And Red 2.
So they've had made those appearances in the films, but they always play the most art house film character in those films a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Except for Malkovich was in Transformers, and he was getting tickled by a Transformer.
And in Red, he's pretty cartoonish.
Well, and Hopkins also was using, said YOLO in a Transformers movie. I mean, there is a point for everybody.
And my brain wants to explode. Yeah. when you mention that, because that's terrible.
The thing with Bruce Willis that makes him, like, apart from that a little bit, and part of the reason why we're having this conversation on this episode, is that Bruce Willis came from kind of a cultural shift away from the big 80s beefcakey action hero.
100%,
and he became the archetype for the, like, late 80s into early 90s kind of hero by accident. You're not going to get the Keanu Reeves in Speed without Bruce Willis. You're not going to
No shit. I never thought about that, but you're
Die Hard on a Bus. Yeah.
Yeah, Die Hard on a Bus. Yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, it actually led for Steven Seagal, who was not a beefcake, to bust heads
To have an action hero that doesn't know how to kick.
Passenger 57, Wesley Snipes, Die Hard on a Plane.
But in reality, if you look at Skull's, like, Out for Justice, Mark for Death, he is not a big beefcake.
Hold on.
Skull's films didn't happen until post,
Siege,
till post Die Hard.
Die Hard on a Battleship.
Yeah.
Which was 1991.
Die Hard on a Train. Yeah.
But you see what I'm saying, though? Like, you're right. Like, the only other guy who wasn't a beefcake to be a badass after Die Hard was Steven Seagal.
Yeah. And he was so much of an asshole that his career never went as far as Bruce Willis.
He did Under Siege 2, and it was Train, and, like, it was...
That was
it.
Willis's performance was so transformative that he was, maybe not the reason for it, but was definitely part of the conversation with the change in the cultural shift of what an action hero is. And then from that celebrity, he didn't archetype himself to a point of always being the action star, although throughout his entire career, there's been action roles.
Yeah.
He has peppered that with a lot of very weird, outside-the-box films. And
With comedy, too, with the sitcom.
Yeah, with the Moonlighting. Yeah.
I really dig Whole Nine Yards.
He's got comedic elements in all of his most of his movies.
So somebody that came onto the scene during the 80s action renaissance and transformed it, and then also was involved in Kurt Vonnegut movies and Terry Gilliam movies and everything else. That's what's a little bit different than some of these other actors, where they have always been the weirdos and not the action stars also at the same time, is that Bruce Willis kind of existed in both spaces for the majority of his career.
I was just comparing him to being a working actor, because he did the big popcorn, like, blockbuster movies. He willingly did a lot of these awesome indie flicks.
Yeah.
And did a lot of great roles that way, you know, and then when, you know, culture shifted a little bit and he wasn't as relevant anymore, he was doing a lot of other stuff. And, you know,
I mean, perfect example is 98. He did Fifth Element and then Armageddon. You can't get any more experimental than a Luc Besson movie, like, kind of the way with how that
retro future movie.
And then the most America movie ever. We fucking get up on that goddamn thing. We're going to use drillers. We're going to save the country.
We're going to blow it up.
We're going to save America and the rest of the world, I guess, but mainly America. Yeah, like that kind of shit. Like, it's the most generic, basic action movie.
Well, I got to give him credit for not only having, like, good comedic chops, but having good sense of humor too, even if he was a little bit of a prima donna sometimes on some sets, because his fucking roast was awesome.
Yeah.
I will say, just real quick, bringing up Armageddon, if you do get a chance to check out the Criterion Edition, it is worth it. As a very coked out Ben Affleck does the commentary track and just shits on his own movie for the entire run of the movie, making fun of and like just Michael Bay and shit like that. So it is one of the Criterion editions that's worth checking out to get the audio track by that.
I haven't done that yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
Obviously,
we could be talking waxing poetic about Sweetest Bruce Willis for several hours, but we are at the very end of our episode. So what I have for
you,
us,
babe,
is this is just one scene, four parts.
And
so
I don't want to miss a
thing. We're all going to be in one scene together, and this is from Hudson Hawk. The precipice of
it's not at all.
The Bruce Willis Mountain.
It's not. But okay, who's going to be Hudson?
Anybody dying to be Hudson Hawk? I mean, I'll be Hudson Hawk.
All right, there you go.
I'll be Caesar Mario.
Caesar Mario.
I'll be Mario. Tommy Five Tone.
All right,
that makes me Antonio Mario.
Hudson Hawk of the classic Bruce Willis film.
Making a drunken scene.
It didn't matter, Caesar Mario. I didn't know the circus was in a town.
Yo, Hawk, why won't you do the auction house, bro? Like, I don't know, man. There's a thing.
I call me superstitious Caesar, but I don't like commenting on a crime within the 24 hours of committing a crime within the 24 hours of getting out of the joint.
Ah, what are you, fucking crazy? Come on, August, the one night's work. You take the thingy and you put it in this thingy. It's kind of like what you were doing in prison with the anus.
Direcciones, even your brother can understand.
Yeah. Directions, even I can understand.
Slaps Anthony on the shoulder.
Shut up. Look, if you want to go straight, open up a hardware store and sell spatulas. Be my guest. And you flip your fucking eggs.
You know, if the Marios weren't the third largest crime family in the New York, I'd say a kiss in my ass. But considering your status, I'm gonna say a slurp of my butt.
Walks over with a bottle of wine.
Have you ladies sampled our fine house wine? I think you'll enjoy it.
Beat it, Tommy. Ha. No dinosaurs allowed.
Smashes the bottle over Anthony's head.
Here!
Holds back his men from going after Tommy and Hawk.
Stop. Let's go. He's got some weird slurp butt shit going on.
Yeah, slurp butt.
Slurp.
That was a cinematic classic.
That
was
so mad living, I believe, that happened.
So much butt slurping, yes.
Who slurped my butt? Who the fuck says that?
No, literally just Bruce Willis.
Yeah, literally just Bruce Willis.
So that's a perfect way to end this episode.
Yes,
all about
is.
Bruce Willis.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening. Definitely check us out, Geeks Under the Influence, GUIPodcast.com, as well as all the other shows on our network.
I am a meat popsicle.
Okay. Make sure to rate, review, subscribe this show and the other shows on the network. Share on your social media. Tell the world all the beautiful things that is Geeks Under the Influence Network. And we'll find you next time for another episode. I'm Mike the Hobbit.
Lowdown Brown.
Join us or die.
Slurp my butt, Hobbit.
Oh, no!
Yeah!
You just get burn.
Join us or die! Join us or die! Or I will swallow your soul!
GUIPodcast.com.
Oh, no, they're shooting at me!
Corbin!
Oh my God, what's gonna happen here?